So I want first to thank you very much for interesting presentation of your research. And anything you want to add or something you think is was it comes with the questions, maybe
yes.
So anyone, any questions? Yes?
Yes, thank you very much indeed, all the three of you. If I might try to test one small hypothesis, which I at least have started considering. We've heard that the patient at the hospital, if a religious person or other, as an existential person, could be seen as a one-person congregation surrounded so-and-so by family and who else. And this sounds like very much what is happening in most churches in what is mostly happening in most churches in Scandinavian countries, that is rite de passage. That you have this one person to whom something is happening, adolescence, wedding, children, and death, and then you have the family somehow connected. And when we started this project, the first articles, for instance, were done from National Hospital in Copenhagen. We emphasized very much what was said in that article, that the religiosity is intensified very much. I have stopped believing in it. But what is happening, maybe you could understand it from the parallel to a rite de passage. As at the times of various times of life, you need a rite de passage. That is, you need to do something, and hopefully there is some ritual available. And also you need to sort of reconsider, but you don't need to do it that much. But maybe after all there is a slight difference, because at the rite de passage, well, confirmation, wedding, it works, you know. You get confirmed, you get married, so there you are. Even if you are not that existentially involved. But maybe here you need to be more existentially involved. Maybe the title of this conference is okay. You need faith. The oncology Hans Fo is here. In what we have two books in Danish, sort of horror books, and this one is called Can Face Move the Mountain, and the other one, Can Mountains Move the Face. In the last one, he is writing on whatever he does as a medical doctor. When starting a new treatment, he says, and it's a very rash statement, and my theologian would never have said it, you have to put my faith in this, otherwise I won't treat you. You have to have faith in this, because otherwise it won't work. He says that. That is what he says in that article. It's rather tough, I think. Well, maybe, and to some extent, probably, is right. And maybe that is also the feeling of the patient, that I have to be involved. It is a rite de passage, but I cannot just let the pastor do it as you can. The pastor is a nice vicar. In any sense of the word, he can just be your vicar and do it in your behalf, so it'll work and you'll go out and it works. But when you are sick, you are stuck in another way. At least when you have this probably or maybe terminal disease. So that is just the question. Now, of course, you have very different material. You're North and Swedish revival congregation, and environment where you still have this feeling of competition. Maybe I think in Denmark I feel strongly believe that the concept of competition is almost irrelevant. It was only invented 100 years ago by the revival people, and it has more or less left. So you can, of course, if you want to talk about one person congregation, but otherwise the congregations are hardly there any place, but definitely not at hospital. You are you, and then maybe family and a little bit. But you cannot survive without also having a sort of existential. That might be that is my hypothesis.
This is a big question.
Yes. Is what you're talking about a week starts with a necessary existential dimension. Personal existential dimension.
I don't know if it's a rite de passage, but I know that all these patients, even though they are not religious in the normal sense of the words, they are all believers. And I ask them take care of you, and they say the system does, the hospital system. So in that sense, some of the points you made were right about the doctor, and they have to have faith in their treatment at the hospital. They do, in fact, have a faith in the treatment. Mm-hmm. And I do believe there are some, the religiosity could be intensified as a cause of the sickness, but it has to be the beforehand. You have to be religious beforehand. There are seldom any sudden all-inclusive conversions. I don't think that's what's happening in the Danish hospital.
When they say read the passage, that requires that you come from something that you know what that is, and you go to something that you know what that is also. Mm-hmm. But in the case of cancer patients, what you're heading at is often unknown. I'm not sure that I understand your point, but I wouldn't use the term rite de passage, because then you have to know what you're going to. You understand my thought?
Someone else? Yes. Thank you very much for your nice presentations. I have a question for you. You said that you had your informants from clinicians, doctors and nurses, who told you about informants who might be interested.
Yeah.
How did they know? I mean, do you actually ask people, well, are you religious when they come to the hospital?
Some do, yes, because there is when in the formula that you have to fill in as a nurse, for example, in the first thing, there is one of the guide words, or what you call that, sökord, is spirituality. And if there is certain spiritual needs that the patient want to lift to attention. So that is one way. And another way is that sometimes you just know it, you realize it, then you might ask the patient. So, but of course this is, I mean, it's all of my informants are religious persons, but the whole point of my study is to study people who are true, I mean, really believing,
yes,
because this is what I want to look at,
yeah,
what happens with a faith. But yes.
And that's why it was obvious for the clinician.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Before we come to you, I have in this relation to this methodological problem question. I am a little bit surprised, because I don't know where you got your this informants. Were all in a place that were religious person, or
hospital.
It was mixed? Because as I understood, that in Sweden you have not right as a researcher to ask people about the religious belief. So it is what one of the major problems for all researchers in qualitative and quantitative. Statistically, in Sweden, there is nothing that say how many, even, for example, Muslims there is, or how many Christians, because it's forbidden that ask about the
religiosity in this way. Therefore, for example, the amount of the Muslim in Sweden is 300,000, but it contains all the people who come from Muslim countries, Jews, Baha'is, Christians, all under the title Muslims. And really there is only 150, the half, because you cannot ask. As a researcher and in this ethical consideration, you cannot go, especially in qualitative, directly ask the person, are you Muslim or this or not? It's therefore when I, for example, did my research and I talked with this cancer organization, so I invite the people, everyone, without that name, who is religious or not religious, and I talk with them, and then ask that they come to me with this criterion that I wanted. Okay, so you can ask that they come to you, but you cannot ask at if they are religious or not. It is one of my concerns about your research. The other one which was I had problems was that you did a qualitative study, as I understood, but you present much of your research in a quantitative way, and you quantified them by that 80% say this or 8% say this, and some kind of the generalized result. I mean that it was only 20%, no? And I have difficulty with understanding that what you want to do with quantified result, for example, increasing or not increasing, and what it adds to our knowledge for understanding. Because I can understand if you have done a quantitative, okay, something else, totally this as a lab, say, an average, but you cannot generalize it to any person.
No, but I can
so
say
something. I have difficulty at this point.
Should I start with the second one? In this group of different Christians, I want to see patterns of changes. And it happened to be that a lot of these people, for example, the praying frequency increases. And my point here is that to make this kind of research, I think I have to have a method that both follows every individual, but also considered my material as a group. And I can say that, okay, informant A, the prayer pattern changes, and I can discuss that and say something of that. And informant B, yes, the prayer changes also there, and I can discuss that. But as a group, those 20, oy, 11 or 14, we can see these changes. And that, of course, also says something.
Something, so, what is the something? Because 100,000 cancer patients there are in Sweden alone. Much hundred. Every year it comes almost at least 50,000 till 100,000. What 20% can you say about this group?
I can say that in this group 14 people have increased their praying patterns. This is
and
what I can say.
We have different idea about the qualitative method.
But there was another question also. Should I ask?
Yeah, about this about this, how you find your interview.
First of all, the ethical committee has approved to it, and second, I don't ask the patients. The medical staff do that as a part of their work.
They choose
to tell
you.
Yes, they
choose. They maybe have the right to do it because
yes, they
are not researchers.
Yes, they have.
Thank you for three very nice presentations. Just a comment to Johannes. He mentioned that this research from the National Hospital says that patients intensify very much religiosity. That's not true. Mm. It says that religiosity is intensified by patients. Point. Helen, it's a question to you.
Yeah.
You combined or you talked about Wikström's two lines, psychotherapy and pastoral care.
Yes.
And I didn't quite get what are the, because I don't see those as either combined to each other or opposed or anything.
No.
But it's, I wonder why did you put these two? Because I think that in the other half of that book, Wikström, he talks not about he talks about what is the core of pastoral care, and he talks about care as, and I think that the diakonia, the thing that pastors have to go for a way with the patient, the way the patient wants to go as a neighbor, so to speak, not talking about religiosity or anything like that. And I think that's maybe why many priests, chaplains, talk very much to patients about normal existential matters, life history, whatever. That's what the first Islam mentions in the second half. After that, he talks about reflection, to help the patient to reflect on these life story tells, whatever it might be, the values. And then he talks about interpretation. How do we interpret these things into the biblical universe? And then as a fourth thing, he talks about deepening the spirituality, verdjupningen, in English. And that's the core elements of as I see it, pastoral care. And that's where I see psychotherapy as a treatment, because something has to be helped, and spiritual care is something totally different. Yeah. You can't combine it all.
No.
So no need to.
No, so I agree with you, and you know much more about it than I do. Certainly. Yeah. But it was just to put up. It was just to put up, you know, the differences between psychotherapy and pastoral care, because you can say, if you're just treating all those existential dilemmas or issues, why don't you go to a psychotherapist?
Yeah.
But the approach into the area is different. So if you're talking with the priest or chaplain, the way you frame the issues, that's different, and you're putting it up very well. That it's like following somebody and reflecting together, trying to find meaning in a specific way. So it's still part of the religious system that you are orientating yourself into.
We have some, yes. Well, and also thank you for a nice presentation, all of you. It's a question to you, or maybe just a comment, because it is also this how, like you first said, why quantify it. But I think actually I was glad that you tried to make an overview over how many of the religious believers had increased their religiosity. And I think that you can say it's for this group of religious people. And I think it's very important for us to know that religious people who believe in God in this way either increase or decreases, and it's very exciting to see that it has something to do with change also, that either it increases or it decreases. And I think the notion that a lot of them actually had very strong religious experiences, I mean, was that just a coincidence that 11 of the 20 patients had it, or is it very typical for these kind of believers? Do they have something in common? Or?
The studies that I am aware of, I mean, there is not really done studies on, for example, when it comes to visions. What we have to compare with is studies of hallucinations. I mean, we might then assume that a vision is an illusion or a hallucination. That might be debated. But if we take this, then we can look at American studies, which shows that approximately 10% of the population at one time or several times in life have hallucinations. But then we must know that all of these patients have, of course, they are in a major life crisis. And what I notice is that with almost all of my informants that reports of these kind of experiences, it has been in the context of some sort of crisis in life. But yeah, it's a very good question. I don't know the answer. I'm working on it.
There was someone. Yes.
It was there had been as I followed the question. As for those two lines you made up, I cannot see that what therapists make and there are. And what we as ministers make, it's you know,
there's room for both, and not every dying patient needs a therapy, and not every dying patient needs a minister. And what I my small question is only, you lined up something with criteria of success in one row and no criteria of success. Could you explain something more about that? Because what is criteria of success is it something in therapy that you have a goal you want to achieve, or is it the goal of your goal, or is it the patient's goal, or what do you mean by criteria of success? I just wanted to...
That there's like an intention or an aim for the therapy, so to relieve the symptoms or the problems of the patients. Where when you are into a pastoral care session, or you're talking with a minister or a chaplain,
but
you don't
to relieve.
Well, it's not like a specific. You don't have a specific goal. Like now, you have to become more religious, or now you have to. Then it's at least then it's a missionary approach you have towards chaplaincy. But else, it's not like you have like. You don't have to fill out forms or make journals and evaluate the progress of the patients and all these kind of things. You're not into the system
and
of thinking.
And I'm aware of that. It's a great liberty for the patients that we don't have to fill out forms with the contents.
You can follow the patients much more freely because you don't have like an agenda with them.
Yes.
So that's why you can talk about the coffee or football games or about dying or about
then
whatever.
Why do you then want to restrict the conversations of the speeches of the minister to the religious items? Why not?
I don't want to.
I thought that.
No, okay. Well, maybe I wasn't that clear. No, I'm just pointing to the fact that having this existential approach, I find it's still part of this belief system that's into our way of practicing Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a part of it that maybe we have like, our approach to faith is more like, well, it can be, it might not be. If you go into some of the conversations with the imams, it's more faith-like. It's like, well, this is a fellow believer. They approach me because they need to talk to an imam, at least one of those. One of them told me. So they're more into faith or belief at beforehand. When you go to this conversations with the chaplains and the patients, they're more open, you know. They're more like, well, what do you want to talk about? Is it your family? But still, the imams has that as well. But it's more framed into religiosity on beforehand.
I see.
So that's what I'm trying to tell, even though it might not be clear. Yeah.
You have 2 minutes and 2 questions. Quickly.
Okay. Thank you for a very fine presentation. Michael, I have a question for you, because I'm also doing research with only Christian lady of science in psychotherapy. But to me, so far, it seems to me in my study that they're not that different from people that don't, you know, call themselves Christians. Now we have all this discussion about the secular society, how it affects us, and how are you spiritual or religious in a secular society. But to me, it seems like these Christian clients, even though they somehow submit to this institution of the church or specific affiliation, it's like they still create their own individualized Christianity or something that suits their particular life situation in this. And I don't think they're like aware of it, but it's like they're still secularized but Christian at the same time. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think I understand what you mean. I don't see that as a sign of secularization. I see it as a sign of individualization, that everyone in a congregation is also individuals. And if you compare, I mean, the Pentecostals, for example, 7 people, they have very different theology, I realize, when I start to listen to them. And the same with the Swedish state church. Some of the Pentecostals and the state church people are closer to each other in some respects. And I mean, you bring with you what you have. You and not all of them have been Christians their whole life either. And No, it's a very complex issue. I think you're absolutely right, but I don't see that as a sign of secularization.
You see it as
it's a very difficult discussion about the secularization and individualization. And the last question, but it's very interesting.
Very short. Thank you. As a knowledge, of course, it's very it's innovative research you're doing, because you don't have a tradition in Scandinavia of having imams attached to hospitals.
Yeah.
In that sense, but I want to ask, what do you expect to find in your study? I noticed that you mentioned you were going to find out about the differences and the similarities between how chaplains. And here again, you use chaplain as Christian chaplains, because you could, in some countries you call chaplains as Muslim chaplains, as for imams, instead of using imams.
Yeah.
But that's another story. But what do you expect to find in your studies with regards to differences between work of chaplains and imams? Or have you already had made some observations?
Well,
I continue, and I didn't get what was the differences, actually.
The differences between Muslim chaplains and Christian chaplains. Okay, so we use that term. It's like you mentioned that it might be individualized, the kind of faith you have and the beliefs. It makes an influence on the approach you have to the patients you're talking to. So if you're like a strong believer, it will influence the way that you approach the patient. And what I expect to find is a more strong belief among Muslim chaplains. That's what I expect, actually. And it might be the way you express faith. That's, to me, it's more visible. Because when I talked to some of the chaplains, I was impressed, or I was aware of that all these existential issues were treated very carefully and with very high empathy. But it was not like that. I thought, well, you're a believer. It's not like this kind of strong faith that just like God's will, all these kind of things that I'm, as a person, might, you know, put into the concept of being a believer. And it wasn't that obvious to me. So it's like the Christian way of approaching some of the existential issues are very close to philosophy to me. And some persons were saying, well, we just use the language of religion because it's the way we talk about these problems. We frame them that way. But my expectation is that the Muslims they're more strongly believing that this is actually a reality we're talking into. And when you contact me, we're talking about God as a reality, not as a possibility. So
I want to thank you and summary some small thoughts only as a summary, 1-2 minutes. I believe that some questions and also when I read said to me that was very interesting, only that should be a little bit cautious about the generalizing the result, and much more patterns. What I actually lacked in all your three, which was very interesting, that they are not different patterns. I mean that everything was very homogenized. And as I know, this qualitative study, the most important that you find the different patterns, but in every this item, this I use this quantitative method of language, that you should present the differences even between these individuals, or not individually, between the what is present what. For example, I want to say about this difference between the Muslims and imams and the other one is that during the last years, 10 years actually, in this field when it is health, I all the time heard that for Muslim it is that everything is in the hands of the God. Mm-hmm. And it is a prejudgment or understanding of Western people about the Muslims, which are very different group and culture. And the result always say the same things. The result say what they want, actually, because they see what they want to see. And they are not coming these differences between these different groups. For example, that in Islam, and especially, they are not this care you know, pastoral care, or, you know, with the archon care, just because, for example, in Catholicism, or, you know, they are the meditation, you know, between the God was important, is therefore they come to the picture. In Protestantism, because they are not, they are individual, and individuality and this loneliness make that someone comes. In many Muslim countries, it is a group oriented, and many times the family entity, rarely you say that some imam comes to the hospital. Even sometimes in some culture it's very negative because it is death. So imams come afterwards. So it is different in different countries here. And I mean, I don't want to generalize. So for me, it is very important that could recognize this different pattern, not only here, in all of, I think, that in qualitative study when we do, we were very go deeply and see that even of all of them maybe say the same, but they are not the same. So in these things, it's going to be very must, for me, the most important that you show to in your work that is not, is different from a quantitative study that is average or everyone say the same things. But even one voice is equal with 200 voices. So I think that this basically says that sometimes when I listen to some qualitative, I say that, and so where is the other voices? Because other voices is not here. And for me, this was striking about, for example, the Muslim things. But that's okay. I want to thank you so being here and flourishing our discussion and the wonderful presentation. Thank you very much.